We are T-minus 1 hour, 54 minutes, and 52 seconds away from tip-off inside a Bramlage Coliseum. The second-ranked Jayhawks are visiting Manhattan. For this year's first edition of the Sunflower Showdown, it is the 298th overall in the series. KU has won the last seven. And it'll be Jerome Tang's first crack at Bill Self becoming the head coach of the Kansas State Wildcats. Welcome to the game. I am Mitch Fortner with Troy Coverdale. We're only on until 5 o'clock. That's when pregame coverage takes over with the Cats and Hawks, tipping off at officially 6:02. And if you are a student listening to the show right now, if the speakers are on there at Bramlage and you're listening, just want you to know the doors open in 23 minutes. You'll be able to storm into Bramlage and get your spot. And I'm going to be leaving the station at about 4:40. I wouldn't be shocked to see Bramlage just about full when it comes to the student section, full of K-State fans ready to bring the Octagon of Doom to full throat here in less than 2 hours from now. K-State is 15-2 with a 4-1 record in conference play. Meanwhile, the Kansas Jayhawks have reached a plateau, I guess, that K-State tried to reach but lost to TCU. KU has won 10 in a row. But I will say, four of their five conference wins have been by 4 points or less. Is this KU team vulnerable? Well, coming up at about 4:25, Mitch Palm will officially predict tonight's game between the Cats and Jayhawks. Again, less than 2 hours away. Now down to an hour and 53 minutes. Not like I got a timer in front of me or anything. Plus, here in just a few moments, we're set to be joined by former host of this show, John Kurtz. Uh-oh, we not?
Nope.
Didn't answer?
Voicemail.
What? John.
He's important, man.
He asked me to come on the show, if he could come on. He might be listening right now if he's close enough. Oh, well, I guess we'll just have to try him here a little bit.
Yeah, might do better than me leaving the voicemail, honestly.
Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, just us two today. Troy will take over at about 4:40 and bring you. Are you planning to bring us the number two song of the day?
I have a gem of a number two song of the day today.
All right. Does it have anything, does it relate in any way to our game tonight?
Just that it would fit the Jock Jam style format.
Okay.
Just it's a pump-up song.
Oh, speaking of song, if you've seen it on social media, I saw it first from Mason, but the other media folks are reporting this as well.
Sandstorm. Right?
Yes.
Oh.
They were testing it out.
Gotta
love
it.
As a matter of fact, we do have a Sandstorm button. Maybe, should we test ours out real quick? Okay. Okay, seems to be working.
Yeah, I think we're good.
An hour and 51 minutes away. Go ahead and try him again if you don't mind.
Hey, what do you know? There goes the line.
All right, good deal. Because we're going to talk to John Kurtz here in just a moment. Mitch Palm again coming up at about 4:25. Going to give you a full breakdown of what to expect from the Jayhawks tonight with that starting lineup, the bench, what they're good at, maybe not what they're so great at either. But now we are pleased to be joined by the former host of this show. He was the host of this show for about 8 years, and now he's living in Kansas City. He's a member of the Three Mile Podcast. His name is John Kurtz. John, we had to call you a couple times. What's going on?
Well, I'm usually working, until 5 o'clock, so I have my phone in do not disturb mode, and so it just, kicks all the calls straight to voicemail, and then I looked up at the clock, and I was like, I guess I should probably check down. My bad, I'm a corporate man now. I'm trained to corporate habits. I'm not like all you freewheeling radio guys anymore.
Right, it's hard to get time from John for us small-time radio folks. I just assumed you're either listening to Kanye or Creed. One of the two was taking up your time as a distraction.
Well, listen, if you pay attention to the news cycle, you say, let's stick with Creed, okay? Let's stick with Creed.
Oh, okay.
But, always use a little extra Creed in my life,
Well, the Cats are 15-2. I need to get an update from John Kurtz on what he thinks about this run so far, that Tang is off to, the best start ever for a first-year head coach.
I mean, it's been beyond my wildest imagination, for sure. I think it's actually pretty similar to the last time I remember calling. I I don't remember what had just happened. I don't know if they had just landed R.J. Jones or whoever in the next recruiting class it was. But I was like, look, I mean, it's gone way better than you could have possibly imagined. And we're sitting here saying the same thing now that I'm saying that was 17 games actually into his career. I mean, I know Saturday was a little bit frustrating just with how it got out of hand at TCU, but, like, this team is so far ahead of schedule, and this program is so far ahead of schedule under him. I can't thank him enough for doing that and taking the program to where it's at right now, getting us to the point where we're all rejuvenated and excited. I mean, like, I was, after the Oklahoma State game, especially the way that ended with Keontae's alley-oop, I was like, man, I just saw the talk about the arena, the atmosphere. Like, I was having nostalgia flashbacks to when I was in college from 2007 to 2011. Coinciding, of course, perfectly with the Frank Martin era, which, yeah, I mean, the Octagon of Doom has been loud, and when Bruce had teams that were winning, it was certainly a rowdy atmosphere. But I feel like the Frank era was a little different because everybody was just so starved for a winner at that point, hadn't experienced it, and it was all new and exciting. And this kind of had that feel because we just went through 3 years through the basketball desert of the team being that bad and everybody just wanting to, and then not only that, but all the bickering and infighting and that sort of thing, and everybody just wanted to be, like, unified on board here. So that's all been really cool. That's been really cool, and that's why I'm using, as you can tell from the way I opened this, that's why I'm using PTO to drive to Manhattan for a 6 o'clock Tuesday game. It's 6 o'clock, kids. Good Lord. But anyway, I'm using PTO, and I'm on my way to the game because I am rejuvenated, like I think a lot of people really are with how this team is played. But, you know, it's not just recruiting and bringing in Keontae, which was a huge part of it. The other part is, like, just equipping Marquise Noel with the development to turn him into what he is now. I mean, he's, you know, he goes from an honorable mention All Big 12 player to, like, Big 12 player of the year, the way things are going right now, which has just been incredible, and it's such a positive sign for the future. I think we knew he could recruit. We knew he could be a kind of a leader and galvanize people going into the season, but what we didn't know is, like, what the in-game coaching going to look like, what's development look like. And I think he's knocked those out of the park so far. So all signs are definitely trending to this being a very, very fruitful marriage between the two as of right now.
You brought up at your time when you were a student, that, you know, the Frank Martin days was, you know, really the beginning, but also felt like the prime of the Octagon of Doom with so many great teams that Frank had. But when you were a student, I remember one time, as a matter of fact, it was the College Game Day game, 2010, in January 2010, where I stood in line for 15 hours to get into that game, but back then didn't have the tier system. Do you recall the longest you ever spent waiting in line as a student to get into a game? It doesn't have to be the KU game, any game.
Yeah, man, I did a lot of it. And this is still, I thought of this yesterday because the highlight popped up of the Michael Beasley game, which was my freshman year, when the streak ended. And that day, like, I got up with a group of people. In that era, like, I was always on the first couple of rows for pretty much every game except that Kansas game. There was no order. There was no tier system. There was no organization, no nothing. I remember standing outside. They had it, like, gated off. And I remember looking, like, we showed up at, like, 4 in the morning. And I remember seeing people that were already staked out there behind these gates. And at some point, like, people just popped them and started running up there in line anyway before you were actually technically even supposed to be, like, let into the parking lot, which I think was maybe, like, 6. It's been a while. You know, I'm old these days, so some of the details are fuzzy on that. But I remember being frustrated with that because then, after showing up at 4 a.m., by the time I got in line and then people that were, like, holding places for people in front of the line, and they had already jumped the fences early and all this stuff, I sat, like, 25 rows up in the student section after getting there at 4 in the morning. But, I mean, hey, all's well that ends well. I didn't care when I was down on the floor at the end of the game. But, I don't know, I remember a Texas game, too. I think it was the 2009-2010 Texas game that season when Texas was number one and came into Grambling. That was next to those KU games of that era. That was definitely the best atmosphere and most fun that I had in a pregame build-up to a game. And that was similar. You know, also had to get in line crazy early. I think by then they actually had some semblance of order to it. I do remember there being groups that they had somewhat organized for the 08-09 KU game that was on Valentine's Day in case they blew, like, a 15-point lead in the first half. So I feel like it got better, but when it first started, there was no organization, and that KU game was a I tell you what, students have it lucky now that they have some kind of organization for what's going on there, because it was just total open the floodgates and see what happens. Back in my day, back in my day.
Speaking with John Kurtz, former host of this very show, former sports director here at K-Man, now with the 3 Mob Podcast, living in Kansas City, living the corporate life. Need to get a couple of predictions from you, John, from this game tonight, which you're currently traveling to on I-70. Each team has great players, of course. But I'm just going to pull out kind of one from each side, two players. Who do you think has the bigger night? Who's bigger, Johnson or Dick?
You can't steal my own joke from me that I stole from somebody else. Exactly what you just did. You stole my own joke. You wanting me to answer this actually seriously, or was that just a build-up to get off the lowest-hanging fruit joke?
Listen, the person you stole it from somebody else. That person stole it from somebody else. It all goes back to, the second week of the season.
It's radio. We're good at stealing ideas.
But I want to treat it as a serious question. Who has the bigger night?
Well, I certainly hope that it's Johnson. I've always been Team Johnson over Team Dick. I can say that with 100% certainty, and that will not change tonight. Keontae's been in a slump, but I think that much has been obvious the last two games. It feels to me like teams have kind of figured out a way to defend him, especially when he tries to put the ball on the floor. They figured out a way to really frustrate him and knock the ball loose quite a bit. I think he had 6 turnovers in Fort Worth. I feel like he's poised for a big night. I think, Fang talked a lot in the post-game press conference, doing a lot of talking in press conferences these days, but he talked in the post-game press conference after the game about, I didn't feel like we had the guys in the right positions to succeed, and we don't turn it over that, our guys don't turn it over that much, that's on us. To me, that indicates they will figure something out, and I would imagine that they will have some kind of plan there. Now, at the same time, you got to worry about Bill Self as the king of box and one, triangle and two, stuff like that. I would imagine you're going to see something like that tonight at some point to try and neutralize some of that. But I think Keontae will have a bigger game. The other thing I would say is, the guy that I fear the most is, in fact, Dick. I very much fear Grady Dick. Because Jalen Wilson's great, but when Grady Dick gets going and he gets hot, I mean, he can pile on 12 points on you in a hurry from beyond the arc. So I know some teams have had some success recently, face guarding Grady Dick with somebody. I wouldn't be opposed to having Cam Carter try to do that, just to take him out of the game as much as you can. So my hope is that is what happens, and Johnson is in fact bigger than Dick tonight.
Yeah, you're right with the face guard. Oklahoma did that and kept Grady Dick to 1 for 5 from the floor, or from 3-point range. I believe he was also 1 of 8 from the floor in that game. So to wrap up, John, I'm going to steal another bit of yours, and that's with the overall prediction of tonight's game, and you can rattle off a couple of keys other than what you just mentioned with the Grady Dick versus Keontae Johnson, who has the bigger game. But I'm going to ask a question you always ask on Twitter. How are you feeling tonight?
I'll be honest, man. I just got a lot of mixed emotions. I don't know. It sounds like you don't have a ton of time. I could talk for a very long time about the comments made at the press conference and everybody's reaction to all of that. I totally get what Jerome Tang is saying, and I think there's a valid message there. But I would be lying if I didn't say that 3 weeks in a row of this, something that he said at a press conference, just kind of killing my vibe a little bit. And I'm sure once I get in the arena, I'll be fired up and I'll be excited and whatnot, whatever. But it's just, we've got back-to-back weeks of a little bit of fan shaming here. And I appreciate the message. I appreciate what he's trying to do. I think he's right. But the way that it's come across and the way that it started more fighting among the fan base on Twitter, or in the case of when they wanted people to get to the Oklahoma State game, fighting with Barry Brown on Twitter, it's just it's unnecessary. We should all be 1,000% bought in, which we are for the most part, but it's killing my vibe a little bit. So I don't know if that's what's really shading things for me right now, but I feel a close loss. I feel a close loss. But I'm also just a little bit frustrated by three straight weeks of like, hey, beat Texas, it's great. Then he gets asked about the Texas job, and, you know, far from a denial, say what you will about his answer, it was not really, it didn't make me feel great. And then you've got, hey, everybody, I'm fine with him saying we've earned the right for you guys to all show up to the Oklahoma State game. That's fine, but then when it's the former players like getting in on fan shaming and stuff, I'm like, guys, you know, people are excited. They're going to be there. Like, it's fine. And then, of course, you know, this week the rent free comment, which, you know, we're going to hear that played on. That'll be on Kansas highlight reels for a decade. That'll be on Twitter for a decade. If he wins, it's all going to be fine. But I don't know. I'm a little all tied up because of that. I think, as far as the game goes, K-State stars, just like they have to be stars. I think we found out last week with both games what happens when one guy's off or what happens when both guys are off. And it's going to be hard to win a lot of games in the Big 12 if both guys are off. And it turned into a pretty big grinder against maybe the worst team in the league in Oklahoma State. I guess that's probably up for debate. But one of the bottom-tier teams in the league against Oklahoma State at home when even one of the two is off. So you've got to find a way to get both of those guys going. And I think, to me, again, I would just make sure that you're not getting beat by Grady Dick and try to make Jalen Wilson beat you. He can kind of shoot himself out of game sometimes, so I would rather take my chances with that. I think it'll be a great atmosphere. I think it'll be a lot of fun. But, yeah, right now, I would love to be wrong. You can come dunk on me, at JL Kurtz on Twitter, if and when K-State wins, and all that's totally fine. But, yeah, I'm feeling a close L here at the moment.
Well, Mitch Palm is coming up next. Mitch Palm will take your words into consideration and put it through the algorithm to see if you lean it towards KU or for K-State tonight. Oh, my gosh. How about this, John? You're getting some outro music.
Oh, there it is. Okay, I was like, I can't hear it. Now I can hear it. All right, I'll take that.
All right, John, thanks for coming on. We'll see you in the Octagon of Doom here in a few minutes.
All right, I am glad you have made my day, Mitch, and turned my frown upside down by letting me know that Mitch Palm still exists and lives on. I'm excited to hear that. Thank you.
Thanks, John, and Mitch Palm is coming up next. So, John, don't go anywhere. You don't go anywhere. Prediction time is next.
You're locked into.
Doors are opening in less than 2 minutes for Bramlage Coliseum. It's about to be a mad rush for the good seats for those Tier 1 kids. Tip off at 6:02 from Bramlage Coliseum. But of course, before we play a basketball game, we got to get Mitch Palm's prediction. Go ahead, Troy, hit it.
Here's Mitch Palm with tonight's prediction.
Cats are 13th ranked in the country. 15-2 is their record. 13th ranked in the country. 4-1 record. Number 2, Kansas, is 16-1. They're the only undefeated left in conference play at 5-0, while three teams are 4-1 in the conference. Cats' 9-game winning streak came to an end at TCU. Meanwhile, again, KU winning 10 straight. Their only loss this year to number 9, Tennessee, in the battle for Atlantis. All right. Let's break down this game. Let's break down the Jayhawks. First things first, Dick. Fifth best three-point shooting percentage in the country. 47.9%. He basically goes 3-for-6. That's about what he's averaging. 3-for-6 every game from three-point range. I want to bring this point that K-State has basically seen of Grady Dick on the floor. And that's Baylor's Adam Flagler when it comes to the shooting numbers. And K-State's already played Baylor. That was in Waco. The Cats went in overtime. But Flagler had a lot of freedom, and he played a really good game. He was 3-of-6 from 3, had 23 points, also dished out 7 assists. Obviously, a learning experience from that. How does K-State adjust to another great three-point shooter who's probably going to be on that weak side wing, ready to catch and shoot? A couple of teams have done pretty well, actually, defensively in Big 12 play against Grady Dick. Tech held him 1-for-5, was pretty good on defense. Maybe Oklahoma was the best so far And what John brought up earlier in the face guarding, yeah, it was working. 1 of 4 from three. First of all, limited his chances from three. 4 and 6, that's a big difference. And also is 1 of 8 from the floor. Now, right now, Grady Dick in Big 12 plays 13 of 28. Without Dick, I want to bring this up. KU without him, their shooting numbers from three without him is 33.5%. I mean, that's a tad bit below average. If you can do your best of taking Grady Dick out of the equation of a three-point shooting team, KU is slightly below average without him. Now for K-State, Marquise Noel has been the best from three-point range in the Big 12 so far. He's 46.2%, 18 of 39. He's made the most threes, I should say. He's third best in shooting percentage. Keontae Johnson needs a bounce back. Last three games for him, he's been 3 of 15 from three. Can this be his bounce back? Let's have our fingers crossed that it is. The starting five for KU, very good. Jalen Wilson is a candidate for sure for Big 12 Player of the Year. Leads the conference with 19.8 points per game. He's second in rebounds at 9 a contest. And he's also second best on the team in assists in 2.5. He shoots it more than anybody else. He takes about 30% of KU shots per game. Kevin McCuller, who's K-State's seen many times, is averaging 11-7. KJ Adams is averaging 11 points, 5 rebounds a game. Now, KU doesn't have that traditional 5. Their starting lineup is a bit of a smaller lineup, especially with the forwards. I believe their tallest player is 6'8". And then you have DeJuan Harris. You're going to have two of the best point guards in the Big 12 facing off against each other. DeJuan Harris, second best in assists this year, a little over 6 a game. Those are the starters. The bench is a different story. They don't have Sherron Collins coming off that bench. They have Bobby Pettiford, who plays 16 minutes a game, but maybe scoring 3 or 4 points a contest. Now, neither team is exactly great when it comes to coming off the bench and scoring points. Both are in the bottom three of the conference, but KU is last in the Big 12 and in the bottom 15 of the entire country with their 12.6 bench points per game. KU in Big 12 play is averaging 9 points off the bench per game. K-State right now is averaging 18 points off the bench. Another thing about KU, I see this as a vulnerable team. I really do. 4 of their 5 Big 12 games have been decided by 4 points or less. And in most of those games, 3 of the 4, the opponent has had a decent lead. Oklahoma led by 10. KU wins by 4. Oklahoma State led by 15 at the half. Of course, not a very good offensive team, but KU found a way to win by 2. Tech led by 8, and KU wins by 3 points. The Jayhawks are so good at figuring out a way to claw back in the contest. They'll switch up a defense if they have to, give you different looks. And I think, you know, a nervous factor comes into play because maybe you do have KU on the ropes. Allen Fieldhouse or wherever, pressure probably starts to set in a little bit. And plus, K-State's defense does worry me a little bit. Because the Cats, even though they are best in the Big 12 at three-point field goal defense at 28%, they're still the worst at allowing the most points. 82.5 a game in Big 12 play. So here are my keys. Keep emotions in check. It's going to be a Pat Bramlage Coliseum, the Octagon of Doom. It's going to be loud. It's going to be a hell of an environment. And I cannot wait to drive over to Bramlage and get my night started inside the Octagon of Doom.
Students are already in the building.
Yeah, doors opened 4 minutes ago. But it's like what Gino Auriemma used to say about UConn. When they would go on the road as the best team in the country, they would draw fans. But the pressure wasn't on them, it was on the home team to play in front of a packed house like that. You know, when things add up, yes, pressure is probably a little bit more on K-State than it is KU. Don't let the Jayhawks get to a hot start in either half. They've been great at coming out of the locker room and going on a run in the second half or even starting hot in the first half. You don't want to let the Jayhawks build a lead. Plus, Noel and Johnson, this one's obvious, cannot afford a sloppy game. Your two stars, who both did not play well, had a rough night at TCU. That added up very poorly for K-State. And TCU is such a good team, they were able to take advantage, and they controlled the game. They really controlled the game the way they wanted to. Can't let KU do that. Johnson and Noel have to take care of the basketball, be smart, and so does everybody else. But obviously going to rely on them more to hit the big shots. Now, with that all being said and done, KenPom has KU winning this game 75-73, 43% chance. Here's the deal. I think this is KU's time to get caught. Like I said earlier, a vulnerable team. They have escaped four of five games so far this year in conference play. With everything said, I think it's just K-State's night. It's just one of those gut feelings at the end of the day. It's going to come down to the final couple of minutes. Can K-State be the better team in those final couple of minutes? We'll find out. I have K-State's winning percentage, 54%. Final score tonight, Cats 79, KU 75.
Dramatic pause. Dramatic pause.
Yeah, I was just letting it set in a little bit. I was just picturing everybody cheering in their cars, honking their horns. Maybe pulled over to hug. I don't know. But that's Mitch Palm. And there's your prediction tonight. So here's the deal. Even though it's us two, Troy, best of luck. You're taking over the show for the rest of these 23 minutes. Number two song of the day?
Number two song of the day.
A little Ask Us Anything, maybe? Well, I mean, there's nobody to ask.
Yeah.
Maybe instead you give your thoughts on tonight's game.
As I put it in the recap, time wasting with Troy.
With that being said, I'm out of here. I'm on my way to Bramlage Coliseum. Cannot wait to see how this game unfolds. I'm out of here. Troy takes over for the rest of the show. Go Cats.
This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Check it, direct it, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoop, that is Hitman.
Okay, so I had to dig into the Jock Jams era of material today for the number two song of the day. Whoop, there it is from Tag Team. Spent 7 weeks at number two, and in fact was the 1993 number two song for the year on Billboard's Hot 100. It wound up sitting on the rankings at number two, 1 week behind UB40's Can't Help Falling in Love, followed by the next week, Mariah Carey jumped over these two Atlanta men with Dream Lover, July 31st of 1993. That said, now, the boys are considered one-hit wonders as their subsequent singles did not find the same success. We all, however, still remember this song, given that not only has it remained a pop culture staple, it's still been a mainstay at sporting and arena events, to the point that the Spurs actually had Stephen DC in the Alamo Dome last Friday night. Yes, the Spurs returned to the Dome last Friday night to play a game for the first time in 25 years. They wound up having moved into the Alamo Dome back in 1993, thus the connection, and the boys from it's humorous. I get it. The boys from Tag Team performed at halftime of the game the other evening. What was it? Friday night? So it was recorded in August of 1992. Praised for a positive and uplifting tone. It received an award in the category for Best Rap 12-inch at the 1994 International Dance Music Awards. It ranked number 7 on VH1's 100 Greatest One-Hit Wonders. It's 58 on Billboard's Greatest Songs of All Time. Atlanta Magazine called it the bomb party song of the 90s. And who can forget that it is right at the centerpiece of one of the best ever Geico ads, as in Scoop, there it is. Recorded in 92, would you believe that, just for good measure, we'll point this out, because the place where one of them, Glenn, a.k.a. Roland Gibson, was working before this song hit, is one of the most infamous gentlemen's clubs in Atlanta. He was working as the main DJ at Magic City. The song sampled the synthesizer line from the 1980 Italo disco hit I'm Ready by a group called Cano. All right. And Glenn played the track in the club on the same day it was mixed, receiving a positive reaction from the audience. I don't know why Spotify doesn't want to play nice, but we'll leave it there. In the following months, people requested the song so often it became clear that the song had the potential to become a hit. Thus, the single was shopped to and rejected by multiple record labels because executives were unfamiliar with where they wanted to go with this. So Roland borrowed $2,500 from his parents to press 800 records. The singles quickly sold out in Atlanta on word of mouth alone. And from there, it went on to see them signed by Stax Records. Now, a similar song had been released by the Miami group 95 South a month prior, called Woot, There It Is. The record companies maintained the similarities were a coincidence. Whoomp was a common expression used by dancers in Atlanta and Miami nightclubs that members from both groups frequented. Arsenio Hall hosted both on his TV show to perform their versions and let viewers vote on their favorite by calling a 900 number to donate money to the relief effort from the 93 Midwest floods. So again, number 2 on the charts for 2 weeks, but went on to be the number 2 song overall for the year, finishing at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 for 1993, Whoomp, There It Is, by Tag Team. The number 2 song for the day. Coming back, yeah, I get to waste a little time. That as we continue on the game this... It is Tuesday, right? Yeah, okay. This Tuesday afternoon, getting you set for KU K-State tonight on the hardwood at Bramlage. Back for the final stretch on the game this Tuesday afternoon, Troy Coverdale. Mitch Fortner headed over to Bramlage Coliseum, where things are going to get crazy. We'll join the K-State Sports Network coming up in a matter of 6 minutes to tune you up for the game. 6:02, the official tip time tonight, as the Cats match up tonight with KU. First time this season of the two, of course, that the teams will meet. Interesting. The arguments that have gone on online throughout the course of the day today, social media has been, well, as expected. After the comments that were made by Jerome Tang yesterday to the media, you heard John Kurtz earlier this hour address the comment talking about the fact that, well, in some ways, KU lives rent-free in K-Stater's heads. And that it is about not hating KU. The comment by Tang yesterday. There's some validity to the point to be made by Tang, but I'm not so sure that that was the time to make it. Might be the only argument that I would have on it, to be perfectly honest. But that's also having seen what, you know, the social media morass that is called Twitter turns into any time that you get into the argument. Our friend over at Kansas Pregame, in fact, a few weeks back, had posted a tweet regarding KU and K-State folks being friends. Why do they have to pick on each other? I jokingly issued a tweet, you know, along the lines of, how about no? Followed up with a winking smiley face, just because I'm sarcastic that way. More to pick on Kansas pregame than it was to pick on, honestly, the idea. But it's a rivalry. And I don't care if it's the K-State-KU rivalry, if it's Kentucky-Louisville rivalry. I mean, honestly, the rivalries get nasty. They really do. And the one flaw with what Tang said is the fact that it doesn't register what this rivalry means in the minds of fans on both sides. Now, granted, for KU, more often than not, they're going to get into the mindset that the rivalry for them is Missouri. And there are historical reasons for that that make perfect sense. But when it comes to what is now the Big 12 Conference, for KU, that rivalry should be K-State. For K-State, it's a gimme. And that means that there is going to be anger, vitriol, rather sharp mockery, all of those things. It goes hand in hand with a rivalry. And I wonder if part of that, at least in Coach Tang's case, comes from the fact, does Baylor truly have a rival? And he's been an assistant there for 19 years before coming to K-State. But does Baylor truly have a rival? It about the closest maybe would be TCU, but I don't see that as being a rivalry. I joke that there may be one in the offing between Baylor and BYU, but that's going to be based on both being heavily religious schools. UT is everybody's rival as it pertains to the old Southwest Conference teams, for many of the same reasons that UT is hated now by pretty much everybody in the Big 12 and maybe even in the SEC for that matter. But rivalry along the lines of two teams that have played some 200 times, I don't know that the Baylor staff can say that they've experienced that, and now Jerome Tang as head coach gets to experience it tonight when Kansas State takes on KU. It shall be interesting to watch and see what the mindset is after the game from Coach Tang. Coverage from the K-State Sports Network just around the corner. We'll, of course, have a full rundown for you tomorrow morning when I check back in with you on K-Man's Morning News. Go Cats! Beat Hawks!